I thought to speak about a subject matter, which is definitely very important for all of us who are practicing Krishna consciousness. And I guess we all have this question on our minds and hearts, namely, how can we feel Krishna's presence in our life? How can we truly experience Krishna? Is it possible for us on our level? Or is experiencing Krishna and feeling the relationship with Krishna really only reserved for the utmost Premika Bhaktas who are in the spiritual world? And of course only for the pure devotees who have come to this world to help us? Or can we also feel Krishna's presence in our lives? So this question has been very central for me throughout my whole Krishna conscious life and also before my Krishna consciousness. So I thought I would like to share what I know on this subject and something that I've been researching in this matter. To open with, I would like to read the verse Shri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Devi Ki Jai. Shri Gonitai Ki Jai. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. It is from the Bhagavad Gita 4.11. Many of you know this verse by heart. So those who know, we can sing it together. And if you like, you can also read together while I read from here the text on your mobile phones. So the verse is, Yeya tama prapadyante tamsta taiva vajami aham mama vatmanu vatpante manushya parta sarmashaha. As all surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Das ist Bhagavad Gita 4.11. Vielleicht möchtest du aus der Gita lesen, Sonja? Oder vielleicht ist es einfacher, ich weiß es nicht.
Ja.
It's easier for Sonja to also read than to translate. So, one more time, the verse says, 4.11. Also, as all surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Prita. Srila Prabhupada's purport. I'm sorry, I'm missing here part of the purport.
English.
I printed it out, yes, but it's missing like a whole sentence. Or
where was the Deutsche Gita?
No, the English. Yeah. Sorry. Sorry. I printed it without checking if it's printed. So everyone is searching for Krishna in the different aspects of his manifestations. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is partially realized in his impersonal Brahmajyoti effulgence and as the all-pervading Supersoul dwelling within everything, including the particles of atoms. But Krishna is fully realized only by his pure devotees. Consequently, Krishna is the object of everyone's realization. And thus anyone and everyone is satisfied according to one's desire to have him. In the transcendental world also, Krishna reciprocates with his pure devotees in a transcendental attitude, just as the devotee wants him. One devotee may want Krishna as Supreme Master, another as his personal friend, another as his son, and still another as his lover. Krishna rewards all the devotees equally, according to their different intensities of love for him. In the material world, the same reciprocations of feelings are there, and they are equally exchanged by the Lord within the different types of worshippers. The pure devotees, both here and in the transcendental abode, associate with him in person and are able to render personal service to the Lord and thus derive transcendental bliss in his loving service. As for those who are impersonalists and who want to commit spiritual suicide by annihilating the individual existence of the living entity, Krishna helps also by absorbing them into his effulgence. Such impersonalists do not agree to accept the eternal, blissful personality of Godhead. Consequently, they cannot relish the bliss of transcendental personal service to the Lord, because they have extinguished their individuality. Some of them, who are not firmly situated even in the impersonal existence, return to this material field to exhibit their dormant desires for activities. They are not admitted into spiritual planets, but they are again given a chance to act on the material planets. For those who are fruity workers, the Lord awards the desired results of their prescribed duties as the Yageshwara, and those who are yogis seeking mystic powers are awarded such powers. In other words, everyone is dependent for success upon his mercy alone. And all kinds of spiritual processes are but different degrees of success on the same path. Unless, therefore, one comes to the highest perfection of Krishna consciousness, all attempts remain imperfect, as is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now I'm quoting the verse. Whether one is without desire or is desirous of all fruity results, or is after liberation, one should with all efforts try to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead for complete perfection, culminating in Krishna consciousness. So let us offer our obeisances to Srila Prabhupada. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Prachamine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashtatya Vrishtakarine Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gauravakarine Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So one more time, the verse say, as all surrender to me, I award them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Prita. So we have heard from the purport of Srila Prabhupada that different worshippers of Krishna who would like to have a relationship with Krishna with a certain aspect of his, this is how Krishna reciprocates to them, right? So we have heard that they are the highest devotees in the spiritual world. They enjoy with Krishna in one of the five primarily rasas, but then there are also the pure devotees in this world who enjoy with Krishna or exchange with him in one of the rasas. Then there are the impersonalists, those who would like to merge with Krishna's effulgent Brahmajyoti, then Krishna awards them in this matter. Then there are the karma yogis, those who are after fruity results. Like we see, there are so many people nowadays in the Western world who are very much trying to work hard and study hard and so on in order to obtain certain results. So in this way, Krishna comes to them, really, by, you know, giving them the results, because we know that he is Yageshwara and he is also the cause of all causes, so he's behind everything. I read in a lecture of Srila Prabhupada where he was saying how the excuse me, how the communists back in the old times would tell to people communistic countries, you go to church to pray to God. Why do you pray to him? And then people would innocently say, yes, because we pray for our daily bread. And Srila Prabhupada would say, yes. And then you come out of church and you see all these communists giving you bread and telling you, so who provided you this bread? Was it us or God? And people, because being very innocent, this is how Srila Prabhupada was commenting, would start to think, oh, actually this is really, you know, the bosses of the different companies and so on. In those times, everything was state-owned, so there was no boss. But, you know, the companies are providing us our daily bread, so it's not God. So people would stop believing in God. And Srila Prabhupada goes one level deeper, and he says, but who is providing those communists with bread? From where do they get the grains? From where do they, you know, get all the power to produce the bread? So it's Krishna. So behind everything, really, behind any result, any award that we get in this life, is of course the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But we are not after the material results. We would very much like that when we chant and when we pray and when we worship him in his deity form, we would so much like as devotees to feel his sweetness, isn't it? We would so much like to feel how our hearts get overwhelmed with this amazing, attractive force that emanates from Krishna. Then all of a sudden our minds are completely absorbed and all our mental fatigue or stress or problems, everything just disappears because we are fully there, we are with Krishna. And I'm sure you also have experienced this sometimes in your spiritual life, isn't it? If you think back, I'm sure we all have those experiences, maybe in a very good kirtan, maybe by reading the Bhagavatam, maybe when we are meeting another devotee. We have gone through this experience of Vrindavan, Mayapur, when we go on pilgrimage. How much did Krishna show himself to us and has allowed us really to feel his presence? So for me, this experiencing bhakti or experiencing really, you know, the exchange with Krishna has always been my driving force behind my morning japa and my sitting in kirtans and my reading and studying the Bhagavatam. I really always feel that this is not, for instance, studying the Bhagavatam. I always feel it's not just a scripture to collect information, to, you know, to fill my mind with all the facts and so on that I can quote later. I always feel that each and every verse is a realization on its own. And somehow or other, if I come in the right consciousness, like in the right submissive mode, and if I really pray enough, and if I'm eager to understand what is behind, like what does Srimad Bhagavatam, what does Sutta Goswami, Shukadeva Goswami, what do they want to tell us? What does Narada Muni want to teach here? What is Shivdev wanting to teach us? What is Krishna saying? What is the exchange among the devotees and Krishna? And what does Srila Prabhupada want to say and teach us? And what are the principles? And what is the mood behind this? You know, and then like one verse can be studied, I don't know, for weeks and weeks, because, you know, it's really about this feeling it and experiencing it. And so you see, this is so much on my mind that I thought, let me share with you how I feel that Krishna does show himself in our lives. And because I was always asking myself, what are the prerequisites, really, that Krishna will respond and reciprocate? So is there something that I can do on my part so that Krishna becomes favorably inclined and shows his mercy? And then I get in this exchange and this understanding. Hi, Krishna. Welcome. So is it possible also for me or any other jiva soul, right, who is in this material world or the phenomenal world, like our philosophy says it, to experience Krishna who is transcendental? I don't have transcendental senses. So how can I then experience Krishna in his presence? First of all, this question. And then the second question is about the prerequisites. So do I need to have a very pure heart and only only then can I feel Krishna. Or do I need to practice uninterruptedly for a long period of time? So after many years of sadhana, or after many, let's say, days of concentrated chanting, is only then Krishna going to come and show himself? Is it maybe when I get blessings by senior devotees or saints? For instance, being in Vrindavan, and then sometimes saints are inclined to bless us, and they go like this, and they bless us. Is it by Sukriti? Sukritis are accumulated pious credits. Does this make me eligible to experience Krishna's mercy? Is it my tireless service that I try to do every day? Like, what exactly brings Krishna, or what induces him to enter into exchange with me? So all these, like purity of heart, Sukriti, blessings, service, and of course prolonged practice, they definitely attract Krishna's mercy, but they certainly cannot control him, because Krishna is supremely independent. So nothing, no amount of sadhana, no amount of me trying, and then waiting for many, many, many years, and then, nothing is happening, Krishna, you're really there, and starting to doubt, and so on. Nothing can really move Krishna except his own free will. But then what happened to me was that when I was just starting Krishna consciousness, like I was really at the very, very, very beginning, I was maybe knowing the devotees for 2 months, even before Krishna consciousness, one thing happened, 2 years before. But I received, yesterday I counted them, like 5 really major, major experiences with Krishna, and I was doing zero practice. You know, I only knew or felt there is God, but I didn't know he was Krishna at that time. When I met the devotees, obviously, you know, I accepted the fact. I haven't been studying scriptures, so really what was happening to me was not coming as a result of reading the scriptures and maybe mentally kind of wanting to see something like this. It really came to me before, and then I read it in the scriptures. I was like, wow, what do these devotees experience? This is amazing. Most probably they experience this on a daily level. At that time, I was still a normal, ordinary, you know, young lady who was living an ordinary life, going to clubs and having friends and all these things. But somehow or other, Krishna gave me those experiences. Now, like for instance, last year when I was in Kartik, in Vrindavan, and I received the blessings of my spiritual master to do a very intensive vrata, or spiritual practice, for a month. And there were all circumstances really met for me to sit down and really worship Krishna and chant and read and study and do everything properly according to Vaishnava scriptures. And of course I was thinking, wow, you know, I will connect with Krishna. But what happened was just the opposite. I was really hitting walls all the time, all day long. Oh, Krishna knows me, because we met twice, I think, or so, and he never saw me crying, but I broke down in tears one time when we met. Because I just couldn't understand, why is he not now being responsive? Not even a little bit, not chup-chup, like in Russia they say, nothing. He was silent, like Bhavani says, that Satchinanda Swami told her, God's silence is very loud. But even this, I told myself, even this is an experience, isn't it? So why do you want something else? You know, you were going for an experience, you're having your experience. So why do you now, you know, why are you mental about this? Krishna is responding. He's purifying you. Don't you see this? But, you know, to be honest with you, I definitely appreciate more his sweet mercy. He's, you know, when he responds with this overwhelming feelings, and when my lifted sense completely, you know, lightened up, and when I'm like, wow, I can now serve till I don't know, to the last breath and so on. I'm so inspired and I'm seeing everybody and being able to inspire everybody else. I love this much more than when I'm crying and feeling completely hopeless and helpless and worthless and all of this. So this feeling of, you know, experience that lifts up our spirits. So I was, of course, analyzing. So what is behind, you know, the sweet mercy of the Lord? And what was behind this bitter mercy of the Lord? So definitely behind the bitter mercy of the Lord was my desire to, you know, like, give my best and be the best I can. And there was a sense of little control, a lot of control. Like, I wanted to do this, and then Krishna would certainly respond. Like, that was, I must tell you, subconsciously, definitely this was there. Like, consciously, of course, I wanted to please the Lord and so on, consciously. But subconsciously, I wanted really to, I don't know, do something so that I can enjoy Him and feel Him. But before those experiences, before when I started being in Krishna consciousness, just at the beginning, I didn't have such expectations or such desires, you know, Krishna, now I'm doing so much, and you know, you should show yourself to me, you should respond in a sweet way, and so on. I didn't have this, and I didn't have knowledge, but I realized that there were a few things which I had. And one of them was really an intense desire, like really a desire, because I was also suffering in this world. I mean, nothing made so much sense to me anymore. I was bored. I didn't know. So many things were, you know, like materially happening. And I was so much praying and desiring, you know, for Krishna to show me my own path. This was it. But I wasn't thinking, Krishna, you know, I want to enter some exchange with you. Nothing like this. I was just, please, please, dear God, you know, I need to find my path and so on. I was praying a lot and I was searching a lot. I was really reading everywhere. And I did also one other thing, which is I surrendered. I surrendered knowing that I will pray, I will do everything that's on my part, but I will just wait for the Lord to answer in His own time. Whenever He desires, you know, I was not having any expectation as to be by tomorrow or by next week, or I didn't have plans, like, in 5 years I want to be there, please answer me now, and no, like this. I was really just praying very, you know, sincerely and honestly and trying my best. And somehow or other, Krishna was giving me His mercy in time again. It was not happening immediately, but after a few years and months, He started giving me signs and real experiences. So, when we look into our scriptures, we also find those principles, even though I didn't know that, you know, at that time, but when we have a strong desire, then Krishna reciprocates with us, just like we heard in this verse. In the amount how somebody surrenders to Him, this is how much I reciprocate. So, I definitely just had this strong desire. I was in this need for help. I was feeling submissive because I felt helpless without His mercy. Still, I was trying, giving my best, and I wasn't expecting anything. So, somehow or other, there were some elements which we are supposed to also have when we chant the holy names and so on. So, still, it was very mind-boggling to me that at that time Krishna gave me all those experiences, and I had those questions. How is it possible to feel Krishna, that I feel Him as a jiva soul, because He is, you know, transcendental? And I looked into our philosophy, and I learned that bhakti has two features. So one of them is that it attracts Krishna, one feature, and the second is that Krishna reciprocates to our devotion. So these two main features of bhakti explain why Krishna reciprocates with us who are not in the spiritual world, and also who have not developed transcendental senses even while we are here. So Srila Rupa Goswami writes in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that Bhakti is Sri Krishna Karshini, or that which attracts Krishna and his associates. See, Srila Prabhupada, when he describes in the Nectar of Devotion the meaning of Sri Krishna Karshini, he says that the symbol of devotional service in the highest degree is Srimati Radharani. And Krishna, even though he is being the most attractive and he's attractive everybody and everything, still he is attracted by Srimati Radharani, who is the Hladini Shakti of the Lord. So, Jiva Goswami gives the explanation to this, that just as a flute player who can whistle with his own mouth, he can produce sounds, still he's going to be more pleased when he blows the same air into the flute, which has many holes, and then the sound comes out in a very beautiful, melodious way. So Jiva Goswami compares us, all of us, all the souls, to the flute. And Krishna invests the Hladini Shakti into us as a seed. You know, he sows seeds in us. And then when he sees that this seed or desire to please him becomes manifest in our hearts, then he becomes very attracted. Because it's just so pleasing. It is more pleasing to him than to feel it himself. And Srimati Radharani, she is, you know, Hladini Shakti personified. And Srila Prabhupada says, this is why all devotees actually take shelter and follow in the footsteps of Srimati Radharani. Because she is the only one who can fully please Krishna. And if we come under her shelter, then we will also become attractive to Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada says, in other words, devotional service is not an activity of the material world, it is directly under the control of Radharani. So how does then, so Krishna feels he's attracted by our devotion, so he's attracted by the amount of the desire that we want to please him, and then he starts to reciprocate with us. So we know that in the spiritual world, the devotees like Srimati Radharani, the gopis, Yashoda Mata, Nanda Maharaj, they all have this mature love of God, that prem, in the highest level. So naturally Krishna is attracted to them, and naturally he's reciprocating with them. But what happens with us who are here in the material world? How do our acharyas describe this? So they say that the attractiveness of our service makes Krishna, now please listen to this, I was really like, wow. They make Krishna come down to our level. Because Krishna becomes so attracted by our desire to serve him, he wants to taste that, you know, that mood of service, that he's ready to come down on our level. So how does he come down? He appears as his Archa Vigraha, for example. He appears as the deity form, or in his deity form. And then on our level, he starts to feel, I want to taste the devotee's desire to cook for me. I want to taste, you know, this bhakti which they give when they cook. Or Krishna starts to feel, I want to taste this desire that they want to dress me. Or, you know, I'm feeling cold. Sometimes, there's many instances in the experiences which different elevated Vaishnavas had, where the deities were showing, for instance, how they feel very cold, or how they feel hot, and so on, and how the Vaishnavas would react to this. Also, Krishna comes in his form as the holy name to us. Why? Because he wants to feel. He's like, you know, I want to experience your desire to serve me. He's attracted by this. So you see, the most important element in actually really entering an experience, a spiritual experience, is to have the desire to please the Lord, either by chanting, by singing kirtan, by reading the scriptures, or even worshipping His deity. And why is Krishna then attracted to us really so much? He also explains this to Uddhava in a verse in the Bhagavatam, where Krishna says, "My dear Uddhava, neither Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Sankarsan, the goddess of fortune, nor indeed my own self are as dear to me as you are." So in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Śrīla Sanatana Goswami gives a commentary on this verse, and he says that in the ecstasy of seeing Uddhava before him, because Krishna loves Uddhava so much, he said, "Nobody is as dear to me as you, dear Uddhava." But Sanatana Goswami says that Krishna actually wanted to say, "as all souls in the material world." So why, says Sanatana Goswami, how is it possible that Sankarsan is not as dear to the goddess of fortune as the fallen souls of this world? Like, is this not contradictory, because he enjoys higher pleasure with them? So Sanatana Goswami says this is because Krishna knows that they didn't have to undergo difficulties to serve him. But here in this material world, we are struggling so much with the mind, with our karma, with the senses, and so on. So he is very much attracted, you know, to when we want to give him service. I remember also Satchinandana Swami once explaining this point and giving the example of a father who may have a very talented grown-up child who is a painter, and who may have also a younger child who is not a talented painter, but who paints, you know, something really, really simple. So the father will, of course, naturally, because he knows that the talented child can paint so well, he'll be happy and he'll enjoy it. But when he sees his, you know, small little child bringing him something made out of love and doing his very best, you know, for his pleasure, oh, his heart will go like open in a different way, right? So Krishna is attracted even by our devotion. And he comes to us on our level to experience it. One example of this, which a story which you have all heard, is Madhu and Lord Narayan in Alana or Alalanath. I'll just find it. Sorry?
Madhu.
No, Madhu, he was living in Orissa, one little child of a Brahmin boy. And his father was Brahmin, and he was worshipping the Lord, Alalanath. And Alalanath, this deity, is to be found just 16 kilometers before Jagannath Puri. I think some of you who have been to Jagannath Puri have visited. Has somebody seen this deity? You have seen? Alalanath. Hare Krishna, it's close to Jagannath Puri. You have been there, yes. Yes. So what was happening is that this Brahmana, who was serving the deity of Lord Narayan, he had to go to beg for alms for a few days. And one day when he was doing this, he appointed his five-year-old son to offer sweet rice to the Lord. And he told him, "And please make sure that the Lord really takes this sweet rice," meaning you don't take, please, yourself. So the boy took it so much to heart, and he brought the offering before the Lord, and he says, "My dear Lord, you know, my father told me you should take this offering, so please take it." Then he went to play, he came back, and he saw that the offering was still with the Lord. He said, "But you didn't eat, you have to take it, please, eat, eat." And of course the deity didn't move, nothing was happening. And this boy was so much insisting, he started to cry. He was so intensely desiring, "Please eat, my father will scold me when he comes back if you haven't eaten the sweet rice." And then what happened? All of a sudden, the Lord took his hand and he ate the sweet rice. And very happily, you know, Madhu, he went and he gave the plate to his mother. And the mother looked and said, "What happened to the sweet rice?" And he said, the Lord ate it. And I said, Madhu, what were you doing? So no, the Lord ate it. And then he went to play. So in the evening, when the father returned home, the mother, of course, narrated to her husband what happened. She said, oh, our son, can you imagine? He ate the offering, you know, from the plate. And the father got really, you know, a little bit angry, but he had this question in his mind, and he told to his son, Madhu, please, you cannot eat this. And Madhu was convinced, no, I haven't done this. It was really the Lord. He ate it. So his father gave the next day the same, you know, amount of sweet rice and said, I have to go. Please, you offer, but please make sure the Lord eats it. So the same thing happened. Madhu was placing it before the Lord. And was, you know, really intensely begging the Lord, eat it, please, you have to eat, otherwise I will be in trouble. Again, the Lord ate the sweet rice. And then Madhu brought the plate to his mother. The mother was again shocked. Again, the father was shocked in the evening when he saw. And then he said, okay, tomorrow you really do this, but make sure the Lord has to eat it. And the father decided to hide behind the curtain and to see how the, you know, what was happening, how Madhu was taking the sweet rice from the plate. And Madhu was staying there, and he was again asking the Lord, please, you have to eat, please eat it. And when the Lord started to take, you know, this kheer, the father from behind the curtain, because he wanted to also feel the Lord, he jumped and he tried to catch the arm. But in that moment, he spilled the very hot sweet rice on the Lord's arm, and the Lord got some burns. So in this way, the father understood that he has done a great, great, great offense. And this deity has been worshipped ever since. I mean, it was being worshipped from before, many, many generations. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also visited this deity. And when one visits it today, the pujaris also show, you know, the burns on the Lord's body from the sweet rice. So this is, for example, a pastime which explains how, or tells us, how the Lord definitely comes and appears in his archa form in order to taste the bhakti of his devotee. And this was a little child. He was not a Brahmin like his father. He didn't chant any mantras. But he had this devotion and he had this faith that, you know, Krishna will take it. So there are many, many such narrations, such stories. I was also reading yesterday, really, so many of them, about different devotees and their experiences with Thakurjis, or the Lords in the deity forms. And for me, this is just so wonderful and so faith-giving, really, that Krishna comes down on our level. Not that we want him to come down and feel uncomfortable, but he comes down on his own accord, because he wants to taste our bhakti and because he wants to reciprocate with our love. That is what he does. So the question is, of course, can we do anything here? You know, can we do anything, for example, when we are going to sing the Gaura Arati, or we are going to praise the Lord by the arati. Our pujari will be offering the items, and we are all going to sing for the Lord's pleasure. So is there something we can do so that we also give pleasure to the Lord, and maybe the Lord reciprocates with us? Because we don't want to push him, right? We don't want to expect him. But is there something we can do to experience the Lord's mercy in this way, or reciprocation? So definitely the first step that we can do, or we are supposed to do, is to enter Sambandha. Sambandha is a relationship with the Lord. So how do we do this? We need to connect with him. So for example, we are standing before Lord Jagannath, Baladev and Subhadra and Shishikora Nithai, and we need to come in this faithful understanding that it is really Lord Jagannath, Lord Baladev and Subhadra, they're really standing before us. It is not a deity standing before us. It is really the Lord. So we need to be in this understanding first and foremost. Like, this needs to be established. Then second step is, my dear Lord, you are here standing before me. You are so merciful. And I, who am your servant, unfortunately, I cannot see this, right? But I am your servant. So please give me your mercy so that I may connect with you. So in this way, we enter Sambandha. So we are understanding who the Lord is. We are understanding who we are, his eternal servants, his parts and particles in this world. And we wish, we request him to enter, that he accepts our service, that we connect, that we enter this Sambandha or relationship. Then, as a second step, while we connect like this, but it has to be something which happens in the heart, not just mentally or conceptually. Even if we don't feel, we can just say before the Lord, unfortunately, I don't feel this, but if you are so kind, you may reveal this to me. Like, we can also approach him like this, be very, very humble. And then we go in our heart and we really feel, we have to connect with this feeling of the desire that we want to please him. Okay? So we are in our heart and we're like, my dear Lord, like we feel very, is there maybe gratitude that we feel towards the Lord? And as a token of our gratitude, we would like to please him. Maybe that's there in our heart. Any real emotion for the Lord that we have, we can find this, and then we connect with this emotion, and then we just wish to reciprocate with the Lord, with his mercy, with his kindness, and we connect with this desire, and then we express it to him. Of course, not by words, but from our heart. Maybe you can just now think a little bit about this, like think of any moment in your spiritual life where you really felt Krishna was there for you. Like, was it while you were chanting? Was it while you were with a devotee? Did he save you from any trouble? You can just think now for yourself. Any moment in your life, you really felt Krishna's presence. And then you connect with this experience with gratitude and a desire to reciprocate with this relationship. And then the third step will be, you're going to sing and dance before the Lord for his pleasure. So we should do this with enthusiasm, not like, when is it, when will time pass, I'm hungry and so on. You should be enthusiastic. You're like, oh my dear Lord, I really want to serve you, and you're here before me right now, and you know I can serve you, and we are all together. This is even best when we can come in this consciousness that it's not only me, but we are here together, you know, as a group, and we want to serve you together. And then the last step is we just patiently wait for Krishna's gift. We are not getting disturbed if I don't know now. We're not hit by some ecstatic emotions but we are really understanding that Krishna will respond in his time. So if we just remember that Krishna, who is Bhava Grahi Janardana, or the Lord who accepts the essence of our mood, that he will reciprocally respond with the amount of our desire to please him. So I thought maybe this would be nice if you try this out during Gaura Arati. And this is definitely something that we can always apply, you know, in our japa, in studying the Bhagavatam, in even associating with devotees, doing any service, like cleaning the temple or cooking or whatever. Because remember, Krishna wants to taste. He wants to taste this desire to serve him. And he's really coming. And, you know, he's exchanging with us. And in this way, you know, we enter that relationship, that exchange with him. So should we repeat maybe one time the steps and prepare, or like a little meditation? And then we just go directly into the Gaura Arati. Should we do like this?
Yeah.
Or what do you think?
Yes.
Yes? Okay. I had prepared many more stories to tell you and so on. I just must say, for instance, about Salabek, Who has heard about Bhakta Salabek? Yes, who was a great devotee, one of the most famous Muslim devotees of Lord Jagannath. Where Lord Jagannath even stopped his Ratha Yatra ceremony for that devotee who was not a Hindu, so to say. So there are so many stories. I thought for the pleasure of Lord Jagannath it would be nice to tell this story, but or this pastime, but we are running out of time. Where also it was shown to the whole community at that time of many brahmanas in Orissa and many, you know, like elevated devotees, that there was this sincere devotee of Lord Jagannath who was praying to him, who was at that time living in Vrindavan, and who had this desire to go and see Lord Jagannath at his Ratha Yatra, but he knew he wouldn't be able to make it in time. So while he was traveling at that time by foot, you know, maybe sometimes ox carts and so on, while he was traveling to Jagannath Puri, he was singing those heart-wrenching songs of devotion, you know, in praise of Lord Jagannath, and songs of longing to meet the Lord. And because his father was like a Kshatriya in the Mughal dynasty, so his father was really bad, and he felt very humble because of his, you know, background, and he would always include this in his songs, you know, the very fallen devotee and so on, please forgive me, but I long to see you. And imagine when the Lord was returning back, you know, with his Ratha Yatra to the Jagannath temple from the Gundicha temple after 2 weeks. At some point on the way, the Lord stopped the cart. And he stood there, you know, Lord Jagannath, and nothing could move him. Even though there were many kirtaniyas who were performing, this was happening for days and days that he didn't move. And the brahmanas were doing many yagyas for the pleasure of the Lord. And they tried what's or not to move him with elephants, with anything, but he just wasn't moving. And you know when he moved? When Salabek reached, and when he saw the Lord. And then Salabek understood, oh my God, the Lord did this only for me. And he felt a little bad to give, or a lot bad, to give the Lord this inconvenience, because the Lord, it says in the scriptures, was standing in scorching heat, in rain, he was tolerating everything so that his devotee can come and see him. Because inside the temple, you know, only Hindus can enter. This is the reason why this devotee could see him only on the street. So the Lord was waiting. And then everybody else realized this also. And of course, they started to appreciate Salabek a lot. And there is even a Samadhi Mandir in honor of Salabek. And his songs of devotion which he was writing for Lord Jagannath are even up to today, like 400 plus years after, they're being sung in Orissa and, you know, celebrated as very high first-class bhakti literature. And just now, today, now it's maybe finished, but today and yesterday in Vrindavan, the Brijbasis were celebrating Holi. And I was having this good luck to be there last year and to witness how they celebrate. And the Brijbasis have the understanding and full faith that Krishna, Balaram, Radha and the gopis, they're really playing with them. They come down on these two very sacred days. They come down in forms of some human beings and they play with them. And they have this faith, and it's just like you cannot argue with them. You know, they just have this faith and they play really, really with this understanding. So last year when I was visiting one Goswami, Krishna Murari Goswami, he comes from a Goswami family and he's very much into holy playing. And he was telling me all these details, and then being with his family and seeing, you know, his mother, his grandmother, and the aunties, and the uncles, and the young nephews, and who, you know, neighbors, and everybody was in this mood. Really, Krishna Balarama there, Radharani, they're all playing. So of course, this mood hits you in a way, because you can't be the only disbeliever, you know, you know, the ocean of believers. You feel a little weird. And I really felt that, I felt just very, very special, really. I must say, you cannot describe this and put it in words, how I felt, really. And one has to go to experience this. And this is, of course, a different type of celebrating Holi than let's say if I was there only as a tourist and I happened to be on the streets and I saw all this madness, you know, where nobody's looking or caring, they just pour colors on you, and you know, and it's like a stampede of people, and oh, where we as Westerners think this is too much, I can't breathe, there's too much everything in the air, you know, and what will be with my lungs and all these thoughts which we have when we go to India. But when you are really there with the devotees of the Lord who have this understanding, and when you really submissively, I couldn't immediately accept it, of course, but you know, with time observing them, I was like, okay, let me try and just also have this faith, and then something happened. So again, this is also proof that this is possible. Krishna really comes down, you know, to taste our devotion. He really comes on our level, but we need to want to serve him. That is the only prerequisite, this desire and the faith, you know, that he is really there, and our desire. So okay, let us then do this now during this Gaura Arati. Maybe we can all, it's time now, right? Stand up, and maybe I can just tell the four steps, and then we can, Gaura Krishna, would you like to sing? And then we can conclude. Thank you all for being there, and yes, thank you.